You're listening to Captain John Doe, real aviation stories told anonymously. Let's get into it.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Captain John Doe podcast. I am your host, Kevin, with...
Hello, it's Mindy. Hi, Captain John Doers.
And Jane Doers, too. And
Jane Doers.
How we doing? Been a minute.
Yeah.
Feels like, even though these come out every week, but I mean...
Does this feel like a long time?
Feels like it's been a minute.
It's been a week.
I know.
Every week on the dot.
This has been a busy week. We have done a lot. I think a lot of traveling has happened for us in the new year.
Some trips.
Expected, some unexpected.
Oh, what was unexpected?
My work trips. Like, I mean, obviously I fly every day, but like I flew on some commercial trips this past week. But
oh, you've been on a little commercial work trip in a minute.
Two in the same week. My experience was a little bit better than your experience, wasn't it? I flew on Southwest. It was pretty seamless.
Where to where?
So I flew Vegas to Reno to pick up a plane, and then I flew from Sacramento back to Vegas as well, all last
week.
Pretty
short trip.
Real easy. Yeah, but what did you end up getting yourself into last week?
I had a work trip to Atlanta for my aircraft sales job. I am listing several planes in the Atlanta metro area just by happen chance. I was like, oh, this is great. I can go knock out so much work in one trip. So I, at my brokerage, we do have a photographer that we hire that goes and takes photos of planes. But since I have a very nice camera and a bit of an eye for photos sometimes, I do like to take my own listing photos when I have time, because then I get to spend time with my sellers and get some one-on-one time with them. I get hands-on with the airplanes, which if I just send a photographer, I'm selling airplanes that I've never been in, I've never touched before. So there's a lot of authenticity I can bring by actually going and doing this work myself.
But you even got to crank one of them up, didn't you? Like, that would have never happened if you were to send your other photographer out.
Yeah. So it just really helps for me to get hands-on with the plane. I save myself a lot of money by not paying a photographer. So there's a lot of pros to doing that. So I went to 6 different airports in the Atlanta area.
How fun.
Via car.
How fun.
I've never done that before in my life. Like, and this is a very unique trip. Like, normally I don't have 4 or 5 listings in the same place at the same time. Like, they all are coming to market this week, like at the same time. So it just happened to work out that way. But I was like, man, I've never traveled to airports like this in a car.
No. And especially back to Atlanta. You know, I find it funny that obviously we lived there for We lived there for 7 years, but like, it's just funny that you have a lot of work back there.
Well, it's not funny. It makes it does make sense.
I
know people there.
You knows them.
Anyway, all this to say that I got in on a Wednesday and left on a Friday. And I made a big mistake.
What was that?
I, being the little cheapo that I can be sometimes, so I flew Southwest to Atlanta because that was the best direct flight and it had the time that I needed. But flying home, also I did book this flight because the time made sense, because I had to do a listing prep out almost near Augusta. And then it's a 2-hour drive to Hartsfield then to get home. So I did need a lot of time. So I booked a Frontier flight from Atlanta to Las Vegas on a Friday night.
But hold on. We talked about, like, in the previous episode that we go wild all the time. So we don't mind Frontier. But what you just said there at the end.
Yeah, we do have an all-you-can-fly pass on Frontier. Yeah. So that's why one reason why I picked it, because my flight back was super cheap because we have this all-you-can-fly pass on Frontier. I'm not knocking on Frontier.
You're knocking on the time and the day and the destination.
And then add Frontier in the mix. If I could give any of you listeners some advice, never fly on a low-cost carrier to Las Vegas on a Friday night.
To Las Vegas.
Arriving at 9 p.m. on a Friday night, like primo time. Because As I was in Hartsfield in the gate area waiting to board, I had already took note that there were several intoxicated individuals.
To the point where she texted me. This was before what you're about to say happened.
Before we even got on the plane, I had texted Kevin saying like, wow, one guy's so drunk, he's already personally introduced himself to every passenger that's getting on the plane at the gate.
He was excited.
He was like in his late 30s, traveling alone in a black hoodie, black cap. He was so stoked, so drunk. He introduced himself to every person in the area, wanting just to make friends. And he was not like making a scene, but he was loud and he was like ready to party. And like at that moment, I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot that going home for me is not home for all these people.
It's a party.
They're going on vacation. They are going to party. And I was like, oh shit.
They're going to debauchery city. That's where they're going.
So anyways, fast forward, boarded the plane, and we're sitting at the gate forever. I'm like, what is going on? And there was no like big commotion or anything. So I was a bit surprised when the flight attendant came on and said, hey guys, we're waiting to push back. However, we have to wait for security to come on board and remove one passenger before we can leave. And I was like, you know, like your little spidey senses are like, we're waiting on security. What? So then everyone like starts chattering because like we are fully loaded for probably 15, 20 minutes at this point. And then the flight attendant, the people behind me had asked her like, hey, what's going on? And she like very quietly was like, oh, there's a lady a couple rows up that is extremely intoxicated. She can't fly with us. You know, like she said, like she couldn't even get her bag up on there. Like she doesn't know what planet she's on. But there wasn't like a big scene. So like, I don't really know, like, and I'm pretty observant, especially in these situations. There was no big outburst. So that's a little confusing to me. But anyways, they clocked it that she wasn't coming on this flight because she was too drunk. That's their decision. So then the Atlanta police come on board.
That's fun.
And
you ain't going nowhere.
They come on and it was a lady cop and she leans over. She talks to the lady who needs to get off the aircraft for maybe all of 2 minutes. The lady doesn't budge. She doesn't move. The cop gets off the plane. Is like, not my problem.
Not my, bye.
Which was shocking to me that if the airline says they don't want a passenger on board, and that's a federal rule that if you're intoxicated and the airline says you can't fly, like you're not allowed to fly.
Done. Yeah.
So I'm a bit shocked that the police didn't force her off, but the police just left and was like, not my problem. So then the flight attendants are all like making eyes at each other. Like, what do we do? Like, we've already made the call that she can't go and the police aren't helping us. So you can tell they had like a little moment there. And then the flight attendant gets on and this shocked me. Completely shocked me because they created a situation where they were intentionally trying to anger passengers to yell at this lady to get off, which is a bold move, Cotton.
Bold move.
They come on the PA and they say, hey, everyone, yeah, we're not going to be able to fly to Las Vegas tonight because the passenger in 11A is refusing to get off the airplane.
They called her out.
By seat number. Ooh. So then, because all of us at this, before the police coming on, we didn't even know who the person was that they were trying to kick off because there wasn't a scene. And then when the police came on, then everyone knew. But like once the police went off, like there was still no scene. Everyone was just like patiently waiting. Like we didn't know what we were waiting for. But then they said, hey, we're not making this flight. Because 11A. And that was like 4 or 5 rows up for me. I was in the primo exit row.
Premium.
So then everyone starts screaming at her as they wished, saying, get the F off the airplane. Everyone's screaming. Everyone's yelling. People are standing up and like throwing their hands and shouting at her. Because I was like, wow, like they called out the seat number on purpose.
They created chaos.
On purpose. Because they wanted the passengers to like publicly humiliate this person until the point of them getting off. Well, guess what? That didn't work. The lady just sat there like stone cold. And she was just like sitting there, honestly, still kind of silently. Like she wasn't even saying anything. And she's just like shaking her head, wasn't getting off. So then the flight attendants did come up with a genius plan, in my humble opinion. this is what they should have done. They said, all right, if 11A is not going to get off the plane, everybody's got to get off the airplane, and then we will reboard once 11A is off. So everyone's like, what? No, big uprising again. And so they just waited out, and they're waiting to see if then 11A gets, you know, publicly chastised to get off the plane. Doesn't work. So like, okay, we're serious. Everybody grab your belongings, get off the airplane. So people start grabbing their belongings. Even the people in my row, I was in row 17, I think. Remember, the person that needs to get off is in 11. So six rows up for me. The people even in my row all got up, got their suitcases down, had their backpacks on, everything. But I sat there because I thought I caught on to what the flight attendants were doing. I wasn't positive yet, but I was pretty sure. So I didn't move a muscle, like literally did not move a muscle. So row one, row two, row three, everybody gets off the airplane. And once they get to 11A, she gets off with everyone else because she's like, well, everybody's getting off. And once she walked off, the flight attendant got right behind her, like put their hand up to everyone else saying, like, don't get off the plane. Like, we just like they tricked her.
Incredible. Incredible.
So then after she got off, I don't know if the cops were waiting in the bridge or what, because I didn't get off, obviously. Then everybody else came back on board. As everyone reboarded, and it was funny, the flight attendants were like, yeah, like we had this plan, you know, that if we said everybody got off, that she would get off. And once she was off, you know, we would just stop the deplaning. So I was like, all right, smart move, like respect. Like that was better than their first move of trying to get people to get in a fist fight over this. So then they're like, all right, well, everybody look to your left and right and let us know if your neighbor didn't make it back on the plane, because they did deplane 11 rows. And so then we're about to push back, and the guy in one row ahead of me, he flags down the flight attendant. He's like, hey, the guy that was next to me, he didn't come back. Like, he didn't get back on the airplane. And the flight attendant goes, yeah, he said he just didn't feel like going to Vegas anymore, and he didn't want to go.
This is insane.
Totally unrelated to the drunk lady.
It's an unhinged flight.
Unrelated to the drunk lady. They weren't in the same party. It's not like he was staying with her. Like, totally separate person. They're like, yeah, he said he didn't really feel like going to Vegas anymore.
Oh, my gosh. It was funny. You sent me a video during, like, the absolute chaos where the flight attendants created the uprising, and everybody's screaming and cussing this lady out. And the whole time the captain's on the PA saying, oh, yeah, it's nice and 61 degrees out. We're expecting just a little bit of light chop, probably about a 4.5. I'm like, what the heck world are we in? And I asked Mindy, I was like, is the door to the cockpit closed? Nope. She's like, no, it's wide open. They're watching the whole thing, just doing their normal little brief like it's nothing's going on.
Oh, it was hilarious. And he did make a comment like, yeah, as soon as we get this boarding situation figured out, we're going to be taking off. And yeah, light winds out of the west. And he's doing his full spiel as people are like, it's a zoo in the back.
It's hilarious.
It was so funny. That's why I videoed it.
Yeah, everyone's standing up and, you know, just pointing and shouting and cussing them out.
It seems like
61 degrees Fahrenheit, light winds out of the south. Should be a pretty good flight to Vegas.
And I'm just like, what is happening? So anyway, then the other guy doesn't get back on just because he didn't feel like it. I'm like, what? So then we take off. Everything's like pretty well fine. We are just about to start our initial descent into Las Vegas, and we have strike three.
Ooh.
Here comes the old, is there any medical professionals on board call? And you go, oh, no. Obviously, like, I immediately feel for whoever's having a medical issue on a flight, because that really sucks. And then part two is very selfish, like, oh, God, please don't divert. Like, please don't divert. And by this point, we were closer to Vegas than anywhere else. So the only choice was to get to Vegas. But the guy, as far as I know, was alive. Last I saw him, he was alive.
So he was on the floor in the aisle, right?
Well, for a long time, they like eventually got him out of his row, put him on the floor. Well, when they first made the, is there any doctors or nurses on board? My first thought was like, ma'am, we're on Frontier. Like, there's no doctors or lawyers or
on a 9 p.m. flight to Vegas.
Yeah, like, there's no one that's honorable.
The cheapest flight in the U.S. right now.
This cost me $80. No, there's not a doctor on board. So then they ask again, and finally some guy gets up, and he had a hospital logoed shirt on, by the way. I'm like, dude, how are you hiding while you have a hospital shirt on?
Not me. Not me.
So eventually, four people volunteer throughout this whole process. They get the guy and have him laying on the aisle. They bring out every tool that the aircraft has, from oxygen bottles, oxygen masks, wheelchair, like every tool that they got. They're fussing back there for the entire descent. And then right before landing, they manage to get the guy into a wheelchair and wheel him up to the very first row on the aisle. They switch someone's seats with him. And that way he'd be the first person off the plane. Mm-hmm. So then, yeah, we landed and you had text me like, hey, saw you landed. I'll be on my way. I'm like, huh, just wait a minute. Like, none of us are allowed to get up or get off board till the EMTs come on. And you were like, what is happening on this flight? Because I was giving you play by play.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
And I have service, though. So you knew before we took off all the chaos. And then right when I landed and got service, I had told you that more chaos was happening. And you're like, oh, yeah. What?
And I told you when you landed, too, like, you diverted, like, to the middle of the country because there was a huge squall line, too. So, like, I know that wasn't even part of the story, but, like, it just added to what I was watching because from how long it took for you guys just to take off and then your flight time. And then you caught up with it because of the medical emergency. Yeah, so,
you got priority.
Yeah. Yeah. Whenever, there's a medical emergency, they break all restrictions on speed and everything, which is needed. I mean, you're trying to save the person's life. I mean, I feel like this is the Captain John Doe story essence in itself. Like,
well, it is. Yeah, because we don't want just pilot stories. Like, we need passenger stories, too. Like,
what I want.
Interesting.
What I want is flight attendants to write in and say, like, how you're trained to deal with stuff like this. Because I've heard a similar situation where flight attendants sometimes want the passengers to put pressure on because they don't want to make the scene. You know, it'll make the news if you see an employee dragging someone off. Like, I get it.
Oh, I didn't see a flight attendant have a conversation with this lady, period. But because they had obviously already told her that she had to get off, and she said no. And there, like I said, there was not a scene. So that was the end of their interaction with her. From the time that everyone, including myself, was aware of the situation happening, the flight attendants didn't get within 10 rows of the lady.
Jeez. So there's two things for those who aren't pilots listening to the podcast. One, anytime you're flying on a airliner, let's just keep it simple, they have every right to refuse service to you no matter what. You have no rights. It's on your ticket.
You
even
just be ugly.
Like, they did. Yeah, I mean, you just be ugly. They can pull you off the plane for no reason. They can deny you boarding for no reason.
And then you can sue them because you're ugly.
Yeah. All I'm saying is don't fight it, because then you could sue them because you're ugly.
Oh, do you want to bring up Zins?
Hold on. We'll get there. And number two, it is a federal regulation that you cannot transport intoxicated passengers. That is a regulation. And
yet so many people get drunk on a plane.
I feel like that reg is probably broken. I mean, they're literally getting them drunk on a plane.
However, I do understand if someone's already super drunk before pushback, just imagine your flight.
5.5 hours on that tube with someone belligerent. Because the thing is I think more medical emergency, which ended up happening anyways, but
to somebody else.
Okay. You want to tell it or you want me to tell it?
You could tell it.
All right. So,
are you going to say about a friend of ours?
Yes. I'm not going to name the name. One of our friends, our buddy, he, just like I do, has a strong addiction. That's not a good word. Liking towards Zins, which are nicotine pouches.
Ew, just kidding.
So everyone who flies on an airline knows you can't smoke and you can't do dip, chewing tobacco at all. That's a rule as well. But there's nothing that says you can't do nicotine salt. So our buddy, being the awesome, intelligent person he is, decides to pop open the can right in front of the flight attendant. And the flight attendant, of course, immediately tells him she's going to kick him off the plane, pretty much, right?
We're in flight. She threatened
authorities
meet them upon landing for him to be arrested.
Correct. That's right.
For doing a Zen, which is not tobacco.
Not tobacco.
Here, because it's not tobacco. Here.
But the can looks like it. So he had Wi-Fi. I think he was texting you. And he's like, I think I'm going to get arrested. And like we're both like, just not.
Can you please just spit it out?
Like,
put it away.
Like, you don't need to get arrested on an airline.
Can you get arrested? Can you write it into my podcast?
Yeah. Because the reality is, it's like, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think Zens are illegal to do on the airplane.
But the flight attendants don't have awareness of what Zens are all the time. So she thought it was tobacco. And his point to her was like, okay, you can't do tobacco on the plane, correct? She's like, correct. He's like, this is not tobacco.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, it is. You're not allowed to have it. It's illegal. He goes, am I allowed to chew nicotine gum? And she said, yeah. He goes, this is the equivalent of nicotine gum. And she could not wrap her head around it. And obviously, like, when you prove someone wrong, they're usually going to dig their heels in even harder.
100%.
So I'm like, can you please just be quiet?
More of the story, just comply on the airline. I know that we...
Even if they're wrong.
I know we're stubborn, but, like, when you're in that tube, you don't have any authority.
Right.
Well, so, I love your story.
Thanks. I'm glad that my pain brought you joy.
At the end of the day, I only picked you up about 50 minutes late, which I was really impressed with because I was like, oh boy,
I'm not even concerned about the delay. Just like the amount of debauchery that went on.
Debauchery.
So guys, I want you to think about if you've ever had a passenger experience. Probably on a low-cost carrier is where our best stories are coming from. We want to hear the Spirit Airlines flights, those experiences. Talk to us about a time that there was a medical emergency on board, maybe from a passenger point of view or flight attendant point of view. Unruly passengers, maybe a time when a captain had to get involved on a situation, either from the captain's point of view or the passenger. Think in your little memory bank because I want some of those stories. And if you think of one, head to CaptainJohnDoe.com. The stories you submit are anonymous and we read them right here on our show. Be sure to subscribe to our show. That way you don't miss an episode. And I think that leads us into now to read some reviews real quick before we get into the show. You got one, Kevs?
Yeah. So... we're going in order on the reviews, and this one happens to be from my dear mother. She Aww. Must listen to the show, so Mom, thank you, Mother. She said, 5-star review, love Sneaky Pete.
Yeah, that was her favorite story. We did a live show at NBAA. If you guys remember, if you've listened to that episode, it has been posted. And there was a funny story about a cat that lived at an airport that was kind of like a community-owned cat that snuck on a private jet and made its way on an international flight. And they found out in flight that this random cat was on board as it popped out underneath some of the CEOs sitting in the back of the private jet.
Oh, Sneaky Pete.
That was Sneaky Pete. The little cutie pie. From LB Spirit, best aviation show ever. This is the best aviation podcast there is, and I would recommend it to my aviation friends. These anonymous stories always keep you on your toes with laughter and thrills. Kevin and Mindy are great hosts and always keep the show interesting and exciting, especially Kevin.
Oh, look at me getting the old shout out there. Who's the star now, Schmin?
Yeah, well, they don't know that I crapped your character very carefully.
You do. She teased me up really well. Let's be fair.
No, you are a really great host, though. So awesome. Thank you, guys. And a reminder that we're doing a monthly merch giveaway all year long in 2026. One winner is selected on the fourth Wednesday of each month. You can enter for free by following us on Instagram at Captain John Doe Podcast and engaging with our monthly giveaway post. Leaving us a podcast review and sending us a DM after you complete it is an extra entry. To do that, you click on our show name on Apple Podcasts, scroll to the bottom and add your rating. This giveaway is open to U.S. residents 18 and older. Full rules are linked in our Instagram bio and on our website, CaptainJohnDoe.com.
All right, so I'm going to start with my first story. It's an FBO story. I actually self-titled it because they didn't have a title. I call it Pee in My Piddle Packs.
Well, real quick, you just reminded me of something. I did just update the website where now people do have to put a title. I want them to title their stories because I love the titles people.
Do you not like the title I just created?
I do.
Pee in My Piddle Packs.
I do. Also, really quickly, because we just talked about submitting stuff, there's also an option on the website on if you want to submit a story or ask for advice. And we already have people doing that. And today we're going to do that for the very first time. So if you go on the website, there's a couple more options on your submissions, just FYI. And now back to Kevin's peeing in his piddle packs.
This is not my story, okay? This is someone else's story.
Based on the title, this could be your story.
It is my story. Anyways. Okay. So I flew my Mooney into Leadville, Colorado for my first time at the highest airport in the U.S. I was so excited for the trip that I forgot to pee before departing Phoenix. Excitement got the best of me, and I filled two piddle packs on the flight up there. After an uneventful landing on a cool, clear December day, I got out of the plane, carrying my piddle packs, to take to the trash and get my landing certificate from the FBO. As there was no trash outside, I dropped them in the bathroom trash can. As I exited the bathroom, the look of the FBO manager was that of horror and disgust. He said, "Did you just throw pee bags into the trash?" I said, "Yeah, there wasn't one outside." He then asked if I at least put them down the drain first so he wouldn't have pee leaking when he took the trash out. It was at this point I realized he wasn't familiar with the modern in-flight urinals having gel material, similar to a diaper, to absorb the liquid. I explained how they worked and that there was no more liquid to dump out, and we had a good laugh. I got my Leadville certificate and a t-shirt and made an uneventful takeoff heading to Denver. FYI, for those wondering, if you take off to the south and can clear the airport fence, you have downhill terrain all the way to
Salida, Kansas, in case you're wondering. I think they're talking about Salida, Kansas.
I don't know. You've been there.
That wouldn't make sense, though.
Well, haven't you been to Leadville?
Yeah, but I don't know the route to Salida.
How was your experience at Leadville?
Fantastic. I went in June because I was doing a summer mountain course, and it was fantastic, but it was crazy to see how a normally aspirated 182 took up like thousands and thousands of feet of a runway when you're at 9,000 feet in the air.
Yeah. Well, I like the story a lot because I personally carry unlimited piddle packs in my flight bag.
Do yours have this gel absorption?
Modern in-flight urinals all do. Would you like to look at one right now?
No.
Yes, they do. They actually are really, really nice. And yes, they have what they call a female adapter as well. So they are really, really nice for small airplanes. I joke with Mindy all the time. She always tells me to try not to have to use it. But some of these flights are long and I have to. And it's not a big deal. And then you just throw them in the trash because it's just gel. Like there's no liquid in it. It's a really good little tool to have. It's better than just a jar to pee into.
Okay.
What?
In my 13 years of flying now, I have never peed in the airplane, not a one time.
They don't call me Poseidon for no reason, okay?
Speaking of your mother.
Exactly. There was a flight you did, and I still, to this day, it bothers me.
6.5 hours, nonstop solo.
It bothers me.
I was even by myself.
What is wrong with you?
That's a prime time if I had wanted to try it on for size.
This was like a decade ago, by the way, and it still bothers me that you flew by yourself for 6.5 hours and didn't have to freaking pee.
No, I kind of had to pee, but I just didn't.
That's because you dehydrate yourself. See, I like to just do my normal day and, you know.
Yeah, well, that's nice that you do that, I guess.
Like, you know, tomorrow I'm going to have some extra piddle packs in case I need them.
Well, if you do go to Leadville, as they said, you get a certificate there, which is pretty cool. That says that you landed at the highest public use aircraft in the U.S., which is pretty neat. And I did also buy a t-shirt there because how would you not?
Yeah, why would you not?
How would you not? That's really funny, though, that the manager was like, did you just throw piss in my trash? Like,
absolutely.
But question.
Answer.
What was the FBO manager doing ruffling around in the trash after this man went to the bathroom?
I don't think it was that crazy. I think he saw him walk in with pee bags and then determined, where did you put them? And obviously, he put them in the trash can. That's my assumption.
How would he recognize those as pee bags and then, but also not know how they work?
That's the better question, is how do you recognize? Because the bags I have, like,
discreet.
Realistically, you wouldn't know that there's piss in it.
No, it's not like huge letters on it saying, this is pee.
No. Like, I'm pee piddle.
You know, like,
I don't know.
I'm just confused how he realized what they were. Like, what are you rummaging around in there?
I use Porta-Johns. Maybe the pee.
Is that the brand?
Yes. Maybe the pee piddle packs say literally pee piddle back. I can't even say that.
Piddle packs.
Piddle.
Say that five times fast. Pee piddle
packs. Pee piddle packs. That was enough. Okay. Enough. I'm sorry, people listening.
This episode is brought to you in part by Airplane Academy, private pilot flashcards. You guys have heard us now talk about Charlie. He has an awesome YouTube channel and makes these really cool index cards. There's over 350 of them. It's private pilot flashcards to help you study for your check ride or maybe a flight review. It's also great for instructors to quiz their students. Head to airplaneacademy.com/John Doe to pick up a set for yourself. And today, me and Kevin are going to pick a couple. And if I don't know the answer, we're going to edit it out. Did you pick one already?
Okay,
what section did you pick from?
I picked plane and pilot. I picked regulation.
Hold on. I'm going to read all the categories that there are available. Regulations, plane and pilot, systems, weather, airport operations, airspace, and navigation.
All right, so I just picked a random one for you.
From which one?
Regulations.
Oh, don't hit me with a reg.
No, this is a good one. It's funny because I didn't even look, but I picked one that you hopefully know. All right. This is inspections. What inspections must an airplane have in order to be airworthy?
Oh, we're going to hit you with the AAVA.
And go ahead, surprise student.
You need your ADs, your annual, your VOR, your 100 hour if it's for hire. You need your transponder, ELT, static system.
Great job, student.
Ding, ding, ding. Ding, I didn't ding, even ding. Cheat. Okay.
What are you going to hit me with?
Do you want to pick the category?
No, you pick because I didn't.
Category is weather.
No.
Oh, wait. Let's do airport ops.
No.
Okay. Category is airport operations.
Listening. Can I buy a vowel?
Oh, a lot of these are like...
Pick one.
Airport markings. Hold on. Okay, this is not a good one because these are photos of airport markings. Oh, here's a good one. Airport beacons. What does the flashing beacon look like for civilian land airports, water airports, heliports, and military?
Civilian are going to be green and white.
Good job.
Military are going to be quick bursts of white and green.
Good job.
And then water.
That would be a tough one for you.
Water is going to be a different color. So it's going to be like a yellowish color.
Yellow and white, yes. Or yellow alone. Okay. Yes. A heliport, what do you think that would be?
Ooh.
That's a tough one because, like, when do you ever see a heliport?
I don't know a heliport. I'll just guess and say it's red.
It's all tree colors.
All tree. Oh.
White, yellow, green.
The only reason I knew that is because I literally had this flashcard with me the other day with a student doing a ground. You picked that one.
When are airport beacons operating?
At nighttime or if the field conditions are IFR.
Wow, look at you, Mr. Instructor. Great job. You didn't even cheat either. I mean, you kind of cheated because you study these all the time.
Well, I had a night flight with a student this past week, and we literally were going over airport beacons.
Oh, that's really fun.
That's good.
Okay.
See how easy that is?
Next story from a Captain John Doe. You ready for it?
Hit me.
The airport in the town where my in-laws are at lays in a detent of the local army base's Class Delta. I was leery of flying into this pocket as a fairly new private pilot, and while visiting on a weekend, I decided to try to go up with a rather young local instructor to familiarize myself with the area. I get to the flight school and the instructor's running late, so I start pre-flighting a well-used, barely airworthy 172.
What does that mean?
Well, we're going to tell you. Upon pre-flight, I find a little water and debris in the wing and in the tanks and the lower strainer. After a couple more stumps, I no longer found evidence of water, but I was still skeptical. The flight controls are also very well worn. In the meantime, the instructor shows, and we chat for a few. He claims to have close to 1,000 hours, of which 200 are split between both planes at this school. This will be relevant later. I explained to him what I was wanting to do, and he countered by saying that we have to do some maneuvers, as it was a discovery flight. I informed him that I'm going to be the PIC on this flight, that we were not going to be doing any of that. He grumbled and reluctantly agreed. He then immediately began pulling the plane onto the ramp from its makeshift parking slot. If I didn't know any better, I would have guessed that parts were going to fall off with all the rattling. I decided that this wasn't a good airplane, and I asked if they had a second plane available. They did have a second, nicer one in the hangar that they didn't use as much, so off we go. Nicer is in quotes, by the way. We get to the other hangar to see an equally clapped out airplane with just a better GPS inside. This is where the discrepancies between what the instructor claimed and what he actually knew became clear. The first thing I noticed on the airplane was that it had VGs on it. When I commented that this was the first Skyhawk I'd personally seen with VGs, he asked what I was talking about, even though he flew the airplane regularly. Strike one. I remember going over VGs in ground school, so surely he'd heard of them somewhere. As the pre-flight commences, I check the oil, and it has 3.5 quarts. When I ask if they had additional oil for it to get to at least 6, the POH says 6 minimum, he responded by saying something to the effect of, if we put more than 4 in of it, it'll just puke it out. A gross negligence of operating standards and minimums. Strike 2. It was about this time I noticed that the tire was pretty low, and I pointed that out too. The instructor, now clearly irritated, says, looks good enough to me. Pretty sure that could or should be classified as a hazardous attitude. So strike 3. Upon rejecting this aircraft, he goes back into the office, fully planning on just taking the first plane up. When I made it to the office, the instructor already had the other airplane's binder in his hand, ready to go, and was visiting with their secretary. He was a little shocked when I handed him some cash, and I apologized for having him meet me, but I informed him that I was rejecting both airplanes on the grounds of safety. I walked away from there a little puzzled by the absurdity of what just happened, but knowing that I made a good decision. Both airplanes were, by definition, probably airworthy, but I felt that they were poorly maintained, and add to that the instructor's attitude sealed the deal. Don't ignore things just because you want to fly. There's a lot to unpack here.
Yeah, I mean, the first obvious thing is making a decision to no-go as a new pilot or somebody going to a flight school is challenging. So I will always say good job at that point, because
it's harder to say no than it is.
It's hard to say
yes.
No. Like, it is way harder to say no. And then the other thing is, going to the instructor's point of view, is this is sounds like a young kid who wants to fly. And he does not say no. I can promise you that.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone who has taught understands what I mean. Like, the saying no comes with a lot of consequences. Now, that doesn't mean I don't say no. I'm very firm in whether I should fly or not. I have more experience than others in just life, not necessarily flying. So I feel like confidence in my own ability to confront said individuals that might be upset if you turn a flight down. A lot of younger instructors might not be. So, like, that's what I'm taking away just from personal experience.
Yeah. I mean, and not to discount vibes.
Vibes are big. And a plane like that, like, water in the fuel tanks, I'm probably walking out immediately.
I mean, not necessarily. I mean,
a flight school plane?
Yeah, not necessarily. It doesn't sound like this flight school has a lot of business.
That's what I mean
by
that.
So if it's sitting there, maybe there's some water. It's all of the things that added up. And this pilot was able to see the old Swiss cheese model coming alive, which if you guys are unfamiliar, the Swiss cheese model doesn't just apply to aviation. It's a theory about when things go wrong, on how all the holes of Swiss cheese can sometimes line up perfectly. And if they do, then that's a bad day.
Yeah.
So it's the water in the tank. It's the rattling. It's the loose flight controls. It's the low tire pressure. It's the instructor not knowing what VGs are. What are VGs?
Vortex generators.
Vortex generators. If you guys are unfamiliar, they're like little
wings.
Yeah, like kind of like,
I don't know how else to describe it. Yeah, they're little wings.
Yeah, they're like little fins, you could call.
Yeah, fins. Fins are better.
And it helps to maintain airflow at slower air speeds to give you better control at slower air speeds. It gives you more lift. You see it on some like stall planes and stuff. That way they can fly really slow coming into land and still have really good control inputs. So yeah, it's totally unnecessary on a flight school airplane. So that was something that I would probably point out too, like, oh, it has VGs. And if the instructor's like, what's that? I'd be like, huh.
Agreed.
That would make me go, hmm.
The oil thing, that one resonates with me too, is because I have said that statement where if we put more oil in, that it will come out. But you know what else I always say is follow the POH. So if the student says, should I put more oil in? The answer I always give is the POH. Even if I know this airplane, if you go above 6 quarts or something, it's going to spit it out. I want them to just follow the manual. So
not hurt anything.
No. And that's what I tell them. I was like, you're never going to hurt anything. Cause that question comes up all the time is like, should I put oil in? And my answer is usually like, what does the POH say? And if you're thinking about it, do it. Because if it is showing 5.5 quarts and you're uncomfortable if that reading's accurate or not, you should 100% put oil in.
Right. Yeah, it just goes to show, the vibes. Different flight schools have different vibes. And when people ask me, hey, what flight school should I go to? My answer is, if you have options around you, you should go visit 2 or 3. Like, even if you really like the first place you walk into, go visit the other ones just so you know how good you got it where you are. Like, you should see, like, do you vibe with the people there? How are the airplanes? Like, your first walk around of an airplane, even if you're not a pilot, you should know, you will be able to know if these are, quote, clapped out planes or not.
Yeah, and your personal limitations matters a lot because Minnie and I have both flown clapped out planes and brand new planes.
God, yeah.
Tons. I mean, my whole training was in clapped out 6-pack Skyhawks. You've done...
I wouldn't say totally clapped out. It was fine.
Your commercial...
was clapped out.
Was probably arguably the worst of
Shout
both of our experience.
CSI listening right now.
Yeah. I would say those planes were definitely, we're not going to name the school, but the worst. And then where I did my instrument and commercial, those planes were okay. Right now, I will shout them out, D&J. They've got brand new Cherokees now. So like highly respect where the direction they're going into.
Even a non-aviator can tell the trustworthiness of a school. Like, how do you feel when you walk in the door of their building?
Yeah.
And how do the people there greet you? And what do their intake forms look like? Do they even have those?
What are they dressed like? What are the instructors dressed like? I know that's silly, but it matters. Like, you'll see me and everybody else in a collared shirt every single day.
And when you go to the plane, is the belly covered in oil? Has it not been cleaned for 3 months? Is there trash all in the back seat that they never cleaned out? Is there bugs all over it?
Like, yeah.
There's simple ways, even as a non-experienced pilot, that you can sniff out, like, this is not good.
Even an inexpensive mom and pop school, which is Part 61, is going, if they care, is going to have a line guy on staff just to do what Mindy said, just to make the airplane always
not necessarily
presentable.
I'm going to counter that. Not a mom and pop school is not going to have a line guy, period. But I remember when we lived in Chicago many years ago, there was a flight school at DuPage Airport, and I loved that they did this next to every single plane on the ramp because they didn't have line people. It's just the instructor and the students taking the plane out. A lot of flight schools don't have line guys. You were very spoiled, Mr. Naples, who gated.
Well, all right. I'm going to stand by that they should because their students can get paid minimum wage to clean the belly of the plane.
No. That's unnecessary for so many schools. God, I'm going to combat you on that one.
Read discreet.
But next to every aircraft, they had a bucket of soapy water and like a car wash style brush. And after every single flight, part of the post flight was for the instructor and or student to give like the leading edges a quick wash. And it would literally take them all of 60 seconds and all the planes were kept looking so much better than they could have. Why are you glistening at me? Well, I see you smiling at me like
I just want to rag on myself for a second. I'm going to throw myself under the bus. So yesterday, my flight, I operate out of Henderson and North Vegas. So at North Vegas, we keep just a couple planes and private hangars, and the hangar door was broke yesterday. So for the first time ever as an employee at my current company, I had to tie down the airplane outside. Now, I've done this 1,000 times in my life, but my student has never done it. And I stopped myself and my student.
Your students don't know how to do that.
No, they had no idea. He had no idea what to do. And I'm just like, I stopped myself for a second. I'm like, this is asinine that you... And also, we have best tugs for every single...
No, you guys don't even teach that.
So,
that's a great point.
Real quick, my students, and I say this from a place of love, have never once had to pull an airplane out.
Fuel a plane.
Fuel an airplane.
You don't know how to do pilot
tie down an airplane. So, like, this realization has started coming on to me more where I am take my kids, I shouldn't say kids, my customers to an airport to put fuel in it because...
No, you really should.
I know. It dawned on me that, like, Mindy, they don't pull it out. They don't... The pitot cover is already off 9 times out of 10.
They don't know how to tug it. Tie it down. Wow. No, that's pretty eye-opening because once they get their license, if they want to rent a plane or go to another flight school or own a plane, they're missing a lot of pieces of...
Let's just also throw this in there. Like I said, I'm ragging on myself. We put a red carpet in front of the step to get into the cockpit for the passenger.
Yeah, that's why your comment about mom and pops having a line guy is so tone deaf and irrelevant.
So for the first time in my career as an instructor at this school, I had to tie down an airplane and teach my student how to do it. And we didn't have the best tug either.
So now you need to add, like, you guys need to go to an airport, get fuel, tie it down, you know, get lunch, like do an actual like trip as if they were going to spend the night there. Like, how do you secure an aircraft?
How do you go to an FBO? I mean, like that's a little bit different. I guess that doesn't matter as much, but like, cause with my owners, I do that. But
even at Embry-Riddle, we had to tie the airplanes.
I know you did. I fueled them. Remember?
And we were bougie.
I was talking to my previous instructor today and he's like, you're like Embry-Riddle prices. I said, no, son, we are more than Embry-Riddle. Anyways, that was, I could go on and on about this topic right here, but.
Hey, guess what?
What?
New species.
New species. Oh, I see. That's an internal joke.
But let's make it external. Me and Kevin both fish. We have this really stupid thing we say to each other that on every day of fishing, when we catch a new species, we go, new species.
New species. Who can get the most new species of the day?
But now we apply it to so many things in our life. Like, we'll be on the ramp and a like unique airplane will taxi by and we'll be like, new species. So we say it all the time. But I'm using that now to introduce to you guys a brand new segment, the advice segment.
Unsolicited.
It is solicited. We literally ask, like, they're asking for advice. Okay, so on our last episode.
This is our opinion only.
Yeah. On our last episode, we told you guys that we would open up our submissions beyond just stories to also advice. we're going to see how serious of advice that we actually come up with. I imagine we're going to be heartfelt with this, but we'll see.
Oh, boy.
New species.
All right. Hit me with it.
All right. In the last podcast, you mentioned you would offer advice as a new part of the show. I'm a private pilot, instrument rated with about 300 hours. Flying is a passion, but only a hobby. This also means it gets deprioritized due to work, wife, kids. Staying proficient and current is a real struggle. I fly the SR-20 and I have access to a really nice real sim simulator. Due to crazy schedules, I only fly once a month if I'm lucky. This means I usually only fly to a couple of local airports or do pattern work. I'll fly with an instructor when the gaps between flights get too large. I debated giving it up, but I really don't want to. What advice do you have to stay sharp between flights and stay proficient when the flying gaps happen? Love the podcast and your YouTube content.
I think this is a great...
relatable.
Yeah, great comment, because I'd say 99% of people are in your same scenario. So right off the bat, like you already said that you fill the gaps with instructors. So that's the easiest thing you can do. Obviously, for us, for your pilots out listening, you need a flight review every 24 months. You need an instrument proficiency check. If stop it. I'm trying to give advice here.
I know, but your mouth just did funny thing.
My advice to someone like you or anyone listening in this situation is do a flight review way more consistent.
Yes.
Like that's agreed. That's the simplest thing you can do is get with an instructor often.
Guess what?
What?
You don't have to be due for a flight review to do one.
Yeah, I think I've had like three this year alone. I mean,
that's because you suck.
Thank you.
Just kidding.
The other thing that I think is really important, and maybe this is my opinion, you're asking for advice for me, and we'll let Mindy share next, is I immerse myself in aviation.
Yep.
So I'm always up to date on accidents. I'm always watching YouTube videos and I'm always learning. So that's really the biggest thing with aviation. And I have to deal with this a lot with my customers who are buying Cirruses, because they're going to fly about as much as you are, very infrequent. Mm-hmm. And they ask the same question as how do I stay up to speed? Because like when I end my training with them, if they're doing an embark, they're the best and most proficient they're probably going to be. And that's an unfortunate reality, because after we leave, they might not fly for another month. So I always give them the same advice. Get with an instructor often. It, you know, in a Cirrus especially, mm-hmm. I would recommend at least every couple months, and then watch accident reports, read about them, and then watch YouTube. Like I want to learn what happened, what went wrong, what could have done differently. I want to watch videos of people flying. I was a controller, so like I have that to lean on, but I still want to keep listening to communication, because I always want to get better, because us as pilots are never, I always use Maverick. We're not Maverick. I'm not Maverick. Mindy might be the closest thing to Maverick as possible, but like I am not. It's just a reality. And, you know, I use that perspective that I am never going to be the best, even if I am the best. I say that from a sense of...
Is it my turn yet?
No. Yes, I'm joking.
I like that you said to use an instructor more often. I think that for you, instead of using an instructor when it's, quote, been too long, you should regularly schedule a flight instructor. I think it should be once a month. If you're flying yourself once a month, you doing a once a month flight plus once a month with an instructor is only flying twice a month. That's still not a lot of flying. And if you don't want to give this up, I think that's what it takes to stay in the game. And if you're not willing to do that, then maybe you should give it up, mm-hmm. even if it's temporary, which is my next point, that I think that if you are a hobby pilot and it is not your profession, you don't plan for it to be, that flying can and very normally has seasons. And I hear this from my clients all the time. We've talked about it on the podcast of people that fell in love with flying and flew their butt off and were obsessed with it. And then life happened and they gave it up for several years, maybe even just several months. Maybe you're going into the holidays and it's just such a busy time of year that you don't want to put the pressure on having to stay current and learn all these things and go with an instructor. Give it up for 2 or 3 months and just tell yourself, okay, in January, I'm going to fly with an instructor 3 times and I'm going to get a flight review and I'm going to get back into it. Like, you can get in and out of it. I don't suggest doing it all the time, but I understand that not everyone has the luxury of time and money and resources. So I do think flying can have seasons. So if you're going to stay in it, schedule a CFI regularly. Be like, the 4th Sunday of every month is my time that I go fly with an instructor, and just stick to it. You need to have personal minimums that you stick to on winds and clouds and all that. Even though you're instrument rated, with you flying this little, I would hardly consider you instrument rated.
Yeah. I mean,
I would never say that you flying once a month should go get yourself an IMC or go fly down to minimums. Right. Do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, that's not even a consideration. And that's another thing I harp on to my customers is just because you have your instrument rating and you're flying a Cirrus as well as most of my students doesn't mean you should just send it an IMC really ever. I mean, I fly every day. You have tons of time. And just think about, like, when we go fly Mojo, if it's been a couple of weeks, how foreign it feels. Right.
Yeah.
Like, for sure. it's such a weird thing. It is like riding a bike to an extent, but the conditions matter even more.
The last thing that you can and should do is, I really love that you have access to this super nice simulator. I don't know the ins and outs of sims and what yours in particular is capable of, but my advice would be to not fly the sim as a toy, as a novelty. You should use it in a very real way. I think that you should fly always departing out of your home airport. Like, don't go fly out of Leadville because that's fun. Like, you're wasting your time. That's a video game. If you want to use it to stay proficient, do the same thing that you would in your real airplane. Start the plane up at your home airport. Listen to your home airport ATIS, your home airport ground. Like, use the frequencies you really would use in real life.
Put your headset on too.
Put your headset on. Like, get into it. Take it seriously and fly specific profiles. Don't take off with no plan. You would never do that in the real plane. Ever.
It's crazy what you just said there. Like, it's not a toy, because I do use the sim a lot, and a lot of my customers treat it as a toy, and you're not getting anything out of it. That's a great thing.
Yeah,
it's not a toy.
People who have home sims usually use it as a toy, which is totally fine. You should
sure,
do that.
But a real sim is not a toy.
But it can be.
I know.
It can be, and that's totally fine. But for this person who wrote in, who wants to stay proficient, again, you would in a sim, people just like crank up and just take off. They're like, oh, what should I do today? You would never do that in the real plane, so don't do it in the simulator.
Yeah.
Fly a profile. You should say, okay, today I'm going to take off out of Henderson Airport. I'm going to fly to Boulder City. I'm going to shoot the RNAV 27. I'm going to set the weather to this, and I'm going to do a missed approach. I'm going to come back around, do a circle to land, come back, fly a profile, like create a profile. I'm sure there's tons of templates online that you can look up. But I would say you don't even need a template. You can just make one yourself about your local airport, your local neighboring airports. Make it as real as possible.
It's great. I agree. I had my Cirrus recurrent check a couple weeks ago, and our chief pilot required us to do weight and balance, to do a weather briefing, to do the whole shebang. And the reason he was doing that is when we have students in the sim, make them do the same thing. And that's what Mindy's saying. Like, if you're going to use a sim, it has to be as real as possible.
Yep. That's that, folks. Well,
oh, real quick, whoever this is listening, come out to Vegas. You fly a 20, I will get you up to snuff. We'll have some fun. So come out and see me. We have some beautiful planes. If you want to fly the G7, come on out.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Well, with that, thank you guys all for tuning in to the Captain John Doe podcast and for all of your wonderful submissions, making this episode really exciting. That was really fun.
I love that. We went all over the board.
Yeah.
I like the advice. This one made sense for us to give unsolicited advice, though.
It's not unsolicited. They literally solicited us to give advice.
I feel like this one, that? I'm more prepared to answer that one than whatever's coming next week.
I can't wait to see it. And with that, we will see you guys next Wednesday.
See ya.
Thanks for flying with Captain John Doe. If you have a story to share, visit CaptainJohnDoe.com and stay anonymous. New episodes every Wednesday. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and tell your favorite crew members.